So, it was really dark in here for that meditation, wasn't it? So, if you're just joining us, we are continuing on the hero's journey based on a book by Dr. Carol Pearson called The Hero Within. And we've been going over the different archetypes that exist in our psyche or subconscious realm of mind that we are acting from and a lot of times don't even realize it. So hopefully with this series, we can become more conscious of why we do what we do and why we are the way we are, so to speak. Okay. So anyway, as we expressed in a previous lesson, you are either in tune with the infinite or you are in tune with the indefinite. One or the other. All right. And a TV series, I keep getting these little tidbits from these TV series, and I got to figure out how to embed them into a talk. But around with that idea, I heard a statement last night that I had to jump up and grab a pencil and write this down. Individual says, my mind is like a racing engine tearing itself apart because it is not connected to the work it is designed to do. Isn't that powerful? All right. And so it's sort of that idea of being in tune with the indefinite is that we're not connected with the work that we're designed to do. The indefinite is the typical thought of human consciousness, which present a form of truth that is true now, but always seems to change with the passage of time and experience. So we'll say right now, this is what I know, right? But a year from now, that which we know now will evolve into something different. And you've heard me say this before. Charles Fillmore, in his books, would write that what you are reading that I wrote now is what I believe now, but if you talk to me a year from now, it may be something very different. Right? And that's sort of the idea of what happens when you're in tune with the indefinite. And if we agree with this theory, then we all know that our present knowledge, what we know now, is subject to change. And if this is true, then we must come to realize that even what we think we know about ourselves is constantly unfolding. And we should never embrace in any moment of timing saying, this is how I am in the absolute, because this is how I am in the moment. But I am going to be different as I allow myself to unfold and learn new things. So as we progress along the hero's journey, we are the indefinite mind being moved towards the awareness of the infinite mind. And the closer we come to the awareness of the infinite mind, the more willing we become to drop the facade of our persona. Does everybody follow me? Okay, so in the book, Is Life the Incurable Disease? What an interesting name. Written by Erica Jung, J-O-N-G. It says this, perhaps the dress of flesh we wear and call personality is no more than a familiar garment that grows looser as our spiritual journey continues and we learn what a blessing it is to go naked. All right? Want me to read that again? Okay. So perhaps the dress of flesh that we wear. What's interesting about that, if you go back to the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve, you know, partake of the knowledge of good and evil, and they were hiding from the Lord, and, you know, the Lord says, why are you hiding? He says, because we are naked. And he says, well, who told you you are naked? Okay. So they came into this knowledge, and so he had to clothe them in coats of skins, because now they realized that they were, you know, up open to the universe, and they didn't feel comfortable with that. Okay, so that goes back to the original statement about our mind is not connected to the work it is designed to do, which is to constantly awaken us to who we truly are. All right, and so let me just read that again. So she says, perhaps the dress of flesh that we wear and call personality is no more than a familiar garment that grows looser as our spiritual journey continues and we learn what a blessing it is to go naked. Now, we can combine that a little bit with Jesus' statement in John 8, 31 through 32, when he said, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Okay? So if you look at being free and going naked in the same context, we could use the same dictionary definition to explain both. The American Heritage Dictionary says, "To be naked is to be without concealment, disguise, or embellishment, to be devoid of a specific characteristic or element, to be naked of all pretense or disguise." It's to be the true you. All right? It's like I teach in a salesmanship class that's called self-concept psychology, the real you, the ideal, ideal other. No, real you, the other you, ideal and ideal other. But the real you is when you wake up in the morning, you go and you take your shower and you get out of the shower and look in the mirror and go, "Oh, that's me." And so marketing has said, you can't take that out into the street. You got to dress that up with some, you know, do up your hair and Fruit of the Looms and all the stuff you got to do to go out of the street, right? All right? But that's the real you, okay? As, you know, my favorite metaphysics instructor says, you know, we all have soul secrets. You've heard me say that before. Those are things we don't tell anybody, okay? And so that's the evolving process of trying to get past all of that and show up in the world as we truly are, you know, in our real essence of self. So what we're talking about here really is moving to a new state of being, not trying to be something definable by a specific role, but rather being open and receptive to discovery of the real truth about ourselves. Who am I really without this persona? Okay, remember you heard me describe it, persona. The word means per is mask and sana is sound. So we constantly have these masks through which we make a sound. And we keep changing those masks depending on where we are and who we're talking to. Am I right? Okay. So in essence, you kind of try to figure out, well, you know, who is the real me? Because we get lost in all those different masks that we wear. So the technique for all of this, of course, you know, of how do I get to the true self of who I really am is what we find in Scripture, be still and know that I am God. Because there's a constant thing going on in our head to dress ourselves up for whatever it is that we find ourselves involved in. However, the challenge we have with that statement and with the statement, be open and receptive. So we have a challenge with this, be still and know that I am God. We have a challenge with be open and receptive because there doesn't seem to be anything definite to be open and receptive to. So somebody says, well, be open and receptive. You're open and receptive to what? Now, we'll say be open and receptive to God, but that's still not what? Definite. You know, to the ego mind, it's saying, what does that look like? What does that feel like? How do I describe that? Right? So even though we as our intellect grows in knowledge of spiritual, knowledge, we will have ways of describing that. But really within ourselves, we don't really know what we're talking about. You get what I'm saying? Okay. It's almost like, you know, if you had that meditative experience where you truly dropped into meditation, and all of a sudden you realize you were there and you come out and now you want to try to get back. Well, you can't get back because you don't know how you got there in the first place. You don't know where that is, right? That's why, again, when I was talking about last week about when we were taking transcendental meditation, our instructor told us, never describe your meditation experience to another person. Because they'll go, oh, really? I haven't had that experience. And then they'll run and they'll try to have the experience. You can't try to have the experience. Because the ego doesn't know what it's trying to have. You're right, Father? Because to the ego, it's not definite. Okay? So, you know, but as we continue along the hero's journey, we begin to discover that what is better than definite, that thing that the ego wants, what's better than definite is that which is infinite. Okay? Because definite says, I only have so much money. This is what's happening in the world. You know, that's definite. And so when we say, I only have, or this is what's happening, or this is what's going on in my body, or whatever, we're denying the infinite. I got three heads shaking. Did everybody get that? You understand the depth of that? So anytime we say, this is what is, this is what's definite, this is what's happening, we're denying the infinite. the infinite possibilities that exist beyond what our intellect can even grasp as being realistic. And what the author Erica Jung was expressing in her statement, dress of flesh, is that we cling so tightly to the garment of flesh through which we express our persona that we constrict our spirit and imprison it within the confines of our persona. So we're trying so hard to be who we think we are, you know, and present this image that we're constricting the spirit from really coming out and expressing what it is. Okay? And so, but the real blessing is when we evolve to the consciousness where we can drop the confines of the persona that we insist on wearing and go naked, meaning being more available to the infinite guidance of spirit. So the idea of naked means I stop trying to categorize and define things by what my perception or my senses are telling me and just totally be open to the infinite. It, you know, goes back to the, I'm not going to say the whole thing, but it goes back to the farmer whose horses ran away and then they came back and then his son broke his leg. And then, you know, follow me, you remember that story, right? And, you know, everything that the people were looking at said, well, this is what's definite. But the farmer was really going to say, no, I don't understand. I don't know yet what infinite possibilities exist in this. So what that's saying is that when stuff happens in your life, instead of saying, this is what happened, just say, I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just what happened. I'm open to infinite possibilities that can come out of this. So to help us move along the hero's journey and to give greater meaning to what we just discussed this week, we're going to be talking about the archetype of the martyr. Okay. Now, the author says about the martyr, Dr. Pearson says about the martyr, at the base of martyrdom is a recognition that I am not the only person in the world. Sometimes I choose to do something not so much because I want to, but because it will be good for someone else or because I believe it is right. Some sacrifice is necessary in order to interact lovingly with other people. Okay, so this can be closely aligned with Jesus' statement recorded in Matthew 22:39 and Mark 12:31, where he said, the second greatest commandment is you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, I don't know if you remember the story, but the lawyers were questioning him, and they said, what is the greatest commandment? He said, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, you know, and all your soul. But he said, the second greatest commandment is that you shall love your neighbor as yourself, right? But applying this commandment to the martyr archetype can be very tricky. The trick is to remember that the commandment says, love your neighbor as yourself, not love your neighbor instead of yourself. Okay? There's the tricky part of the whole process. So quite often our relationships call for us to sacrifice for the benefit of the relationship or for the benefit of the person or persons in whom we are in numerous relationships. The action of sacrifice is typically where we choose in favor of another person. The definition of sacrifice is the act of giving up something that you want to keep, especially in order to get or do something else or to help someone else, all right? But when it comes to sacrifice, we need to verify within ourselves that even though the action may be right, is it our intent, if we look at ourselves honestly, is it our intent to sacrifice for others in return for what we can learn about ourselves and how we can move along our spiritual journey, or are we sacrificing purely for validation and recognition for what we have done? Okay? So in the first case, whether or not the person validates or recognizes your sacrifice is of no consequence to your inner growth and development and your sense of well-being. In the second case, your whole sense of well-being is balanced on how much the others respond and praise you for your sacrifice. And this is why so many people operating in the martyr archetype are angry and unhappy. It is because their sacrifice comes with a condition that you must recognize and acknowledge what I have done for you. Okay. Am I on the right track? I'm just talking to myself. Okay. All right. So, in the spiritually immature martyr, all right, is suffering from his or her sacrifices, and they want you to know that they're suffering. And to some degree, they want you to also experience a sense of suffering. Now, the commentator in the book, The Hero Within, says this about true heroes and heroines. True heroes and heroines not only endure the challenges of sacrifice, they also maintain their love of life, their courage, and their capacity to care for others. No matter how much suffering they may experience, they do not pass it on to others. That's a true hero or heroine on the journey, okay? Now, we're constantly asked by life to choose what we're calling to sacrifice. At every turn of our lives, there are events, circumstances, relationships, situations that say you must choose. Choose what you're going to sacrifice. Sacrificing something for some benefit, either whether it's yours or somebody else's. That process is always going on. However, even though our life seems to be mostly about relationships, the most critical relationship that we have is the one that we have with ourselves. Okay? And this is because it is a relationship we have with ourselves that has the greatest impact on our relationship with our indwelling Lord, or the law that governs our heart, mind, and soul. So you have to have that close inner relationship, right? And if we put off loving ourselves for any reason, we are at the same time putting off our ability to love and connect with the divine presence of love within us. And this will affect our ability to have sincere, unconditional love with our neighbor. So it's always an inner process. How many people saw the movie 12 Strong? Nobody saw that movie. Wow. It's a movie about when 9/11 happened. They had to respond to Al-Qaeda And so it was a classified story of 12 Army Rangers who had to go over there and destroy Al-Qaeda, because if they didn't, there would have been a continuation of that attack on our country. And there were three generals of three different tribes over there. They had to hook up with one of the tribes to hit these cells one at a time. They had to identify the cells, and then, you know, bombers would drop bombs to wipe them up, and they had to keep moving through doing that. But these 12 guys, when they got over there, who are 12 Army Rangers, are used to, you know, Humvees and whatnot, because they were working with these tribes from that country, Afghanistan, they had to do it on horseback. To watch that movie and what they had to do to make that, to accomplish their mission, I kept saying to Pam, that is a different kind of human being. All right? And they did stop, they did accomplish their mission. And when they got back here, because it was a classified mission, there was no parades, there was no commendations, there was no nothing. And they just unclassified it so that they could, you know, tell the story. But can you imagine that kind of a sacrifice? And, you know, Tree says to us all the time, you have no idea what is done to keep this country safe. Am I right, Rod? You have no idea. You know, we just go about our lives every day willy-nilly, but there are people out there making incredible sacrifices. You need to see that movie, 12 Strong. It's in Redbox, right? So, but anyway, the part of what Jesus called the second greatest commandment, where he said, love your neighbor as yourself, is at the very heart of the journey that the hero is taking in the martyr role, okay? So the question is, when and how much are we willing to sacrifice for another? When and how much are we willing to sacrifice for another? Now, in Luke 10, 29 through 30, 37, after Jesus had correctly answered the lawyer who said, what is the greatest commandment? And he said to him, you know, love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor as yourself. The lawyer says, you answered correctly. But then the lawyer went on to question him some more, right? He said to him, desiring to justify himself, he said to Jesus, well, who is my neighbor? Okay? This is what Jesus said. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to that place and saw the man, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion, and he went to him and bound his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he set him on his own beast, brought him to an inn, took care of him. And then the next day he took out 2 denarii to give to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. And Jesus asked, which of these three do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And the lawyer answered, the one who showed mercy to him. And Jesus said, then go and do likewise. Okay. Now, let's try to understand the totality of that parable. Remember again, when you're reading stuff in the Bible, it's not about stuff that happened out here. It's about stuff that's happening in here. Okay. So from the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, we learn that both the priest and the Levite are being mentioned in the same context. They both symbolize the forms of religious thought in us that follow the set law, letter of the law, with little or no thought of practical use or application or the inner spiritual significance. So it's people who say, well, I'm a Christian, for example, or I'm this, I'm that. But their behavior or our behavior does not demonstrate what we say we believe. Okay, that's the priest and the Levite. Now, in other words, they showboat the law for the benefit of personal recognition. Okay, and in this story, they were on a lonely road with no one to showboat for, so the sacrifice of helping the man was not important for their own personal benefit. That's why they went on the other side. Okay, but it's important to remember again that in unity, all parables, all allegories, all stories are symbolic of the movement and consciousness that occurs within ourselves. So with that in mind, metaphysically, our neighbor is our closest and most embodied thought. Okay? If a thought is embodied, it will eventually affect our body. Thus the statement, you are what you think about. Meaning the body actually becomes an expression of our nearest and most intimate thought. Thus the body, in effect, is our neighbor. Okay, you with me? So, the man who is stripped and beaten and left for dead symbolizes the physical body that is in a similar condition. The robbers are our lawless thoughts that beat and rob our body, mind, and heart of their vital energy and substance. And you know how it is when your mind is all wrapped up in something, you're worried, and you're going, and you feel physically run down. It's interesting. I called up Kaiser and I said I wanted to have this shoulder check because it was hurting a little bit. And within a few days, I got these emails back. One was to meet with somebody in the mind body pain management. So they have a mind body pain division. And then I could meet with the pain psychiatrist, all right? And so, but I thought that was really helpful. So they were saying, I said, yes, I want the surgeon to look at it, but they're saying, we have all of these other sort of non-medical modalities that can help your mind to work with what's going on with the pain. And I understand now that they're doing that more, and tell me, McDez, if I'm right, but they're doing more of that than they are of surgery. They want you, and drugs. Before they give you surgery or drugs, they want you to deal with more of the mind-body connection dynamic and physical therapy. You know, isn't that powerful? Okay. So the thing to realize here is that when we listen to this story, the robbers who are the ones that, they're the thoughts we have that are robbing and beating our own bodies of the physical energy. So the priest and the Levite represent the ignorance and the indifference to truth that are found in our human awareness. And even though we know about religious matters, we still allow lawless thoughts to beat and rob the body, mind, and heart of their vital energy and substance. And then when the energy is robbed from our body, mind, and heart, we feel less than whole, or we feel unholy. All right? So the Good Samaritan in this parable symbolizes Christ in you as your hope of glory, which is a quote that Paul gave to Colossians in chapter 27. So the leading characteristic of the Good Samaritan in this parable are kindheartedness, helpfulness, generosity. He typifies that trait that makes religion a living, breathing, spiritually uplifting, active power. All right? So it's more than to say that I believe in God, or I'm a Christian, or I have faith, or whatever those things. It's much more than that. You have to what? Be an active demonstration of it. Okay? It has to be an embodied thought. It can't be something you say with your mouth. It has to be something that you really know with your heart. And that's sort of like, you know, people say to me, well, how do you come up with these Sunday talks? It's usually an answer to a question that I have for myself. It's something that I'm trying to figure out, and that becomes the foundation for the talk. Does that make sense? So it's really in answering my own dilemma that I'm going through that it evolves into a Sunday talk, okay? And then something like if somebody says, have faith, let's use an example. Well, saying have faith to me means absolutely nothing. I have to understand what is the dynamics, the mechanics of faith, and how do I really understand what that is so that it can become a mechanism by which I function, as opposed to just a thought of something that I say. Does that make sense? Okay. So, you know, it's only by being and living the truth that the efforts of the Samaritan will heal the many wounds that our lawless thinking has perpetuated on our body, mind, and heart. So the Samaritan is not just an individual that existed in history. The Samaritan is actually an idea that exists inside of us that's coming along constantly trying to pick us up after we beat ourselves down. All right? Now we can say, oh no, it's because of the news, or it's because of this, or it's because of that. We're pointing outside of ourselves, but it's also always because of the decision that we made inside of our own being. Am I going to lift myself up, or am I going to beat myself down? Okay? So, and then the oil, everything in Scripture has a meaning. The oil that was applied to the wounds represents love, and the wine represents life. And so it is with us. We also must apply love to the wounds we inflict on ourselves, and also must infuse life into our body, mind, and heart that we have drained of the life substance with our lawless, worrisome thinking. So mechanically, does that make sense? You know, the practical application of that idea. So thoughts that beat and rob us of life-giving energy and divine substance are thoughts of fear, in the form of limitation, sickness, unforgiveness, judgment, possessiveness of both things and people, and so on. And the thing is, all of those things are justifiable in the mind of the ego, in the mind of the persona, in the mind of each one of us, right? You know, if I don't have enough, you get worried. If I'm feeling sick, you get worried. If you get what I'm saying, right? And if you say something to somebody, they go, yeah, I understand. And yes, we do need to support each other. But at the same time, it's giving that uplifting thought. And we do that anyway. Don't we do that? You know, it's giving that uplifting thought to the individual. It's sort of being the Samaritan, not only for ourselves and in each other's lives. So it's at the very beginning level of martyrdom where we make sacrifices for inappropriate reasons. The very beginning of martyrdom is where we make sacrifices for inappropriate reasons. Meaning I make a sacrifice because I want recognition that I made this sacrifice. Okay, and most of our inappropriateness is due to living life with rigid, judgmental ideas about how people and things must be in order to meet our sense of neediness. And Dr. Carol, in her book, The Hero Within, says that we must develop a commitment to living this life by giving up the position of being disappointed idealists and let ourselves know what a blessing it is to be incarnated on this planet. Let me say that again. We must develop a commitment to living this life by giving up the position of being disappointed idealists and let ourselves know what a blessing it is to be incarnated on this planet. And again, if you follow the readings of Kryon, he says, we as spiritual beings stand on line for our next turn to come back into this dimension. You know, and many of us going, why did I do that? Right? Okay. And she says also, living life appropriately means giving up the notion of scarcity, that there is not enough love or whatever to go around. We give up the false notion that I am not enough, you are not enough, and my world somehow is not enough. That's the notion we want to give up, okay? And realize, and again, see, I am not enough, you are not enough, the world is not enough, is having the mind of the indefinite, okay? The mind of the infinite would say, I am enough, you are enough, the world is enough. Does that make sense? Okay. And so when we commit to living this life, we accept the risk of committing to the unknown. All right. And one of the greatest commitments is when we, the hero or heroine in the role of the martyr, sacrifice part of ourselves or our dream to enter into a real relationship with another. And this is probably the most frequent sacrifice we make. And this leads me to another quote from the book. And it is a part of my wedding presentation I do when I'm doing a wedding that I have in there. And I couldn't remember where I got it from. And now I remember. And this is what it says in the book, The Hero Within. It is sacrificing the idea of the perfect mate for a real flawed human being. And that's in my talk. And I couldn't remember where I got that from, right? It says, when we do so honestly and freely out of a clear preference, the result can be transformative. If the commitment is reciprocal, it can make for a magic relationship of closeness and joy. However, if it is not reciprocal, it still can be personally transformative because through it, we learn the skill of loving fully and not holding back from that experience. Because a lot of times we're saying, you know, I'll love you if you love me. And that's not the infinite. That's the indefinite. Okay. And that idea about, you know, falling in love with a real flawed human being, you know, because we're always looking for the perfect partner. You know, the perfect partner doesn't exist. Not in this dimension. We meet people and people come into our lives because we have things to teach each other and to learn from each other. Right? And that's what the process is about. And so it is with each one of us. We must be willing to enter into real working relationship with the indwelling presence of our living Christ. And through this relationship, allow the healing of the wounds that we may be experiencing. Because if my wounds are healing, then I can help you to heal your wounds. All right? I can be an instrument for that. And, you know, when we as martyrs evolve to a higher state of awareness, we will realize that the greatest sacrifice we can make is to freely and willingly give our lives to the Christ life. And on that day, in that moment, we will truly and consciously be immersed in the hero's journey. Amen.